You are listening to the Financial Clarity for Doctors podcast by Finity Group, LLC, where we discuss the pertinent financial planning topics facing physicians and other medical professionals. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. And now, here are your hosts, Rochelle VanderZanden and Corey Janoff.
Welcome back to Financial Clarity for Doctors, everyone. This is Rochelle VanderZanden. As always, Corey Janoff is with me.
Hey, yo.
Hey. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about mess-ups, because we all make mistakes. And I think this time of year, as everyone is trying to file taxes, there's like this big angsty feeling in our lives that we're going to mess up our taxes, that we're not going to give all the documents to our CPA, or, you know, if we do it our own, that we're going to mess something up and someone's going to come get us. But realistically, if we make a mistake, most of the time there's a way to fix it. You know, so today we're going to talk a little bit, not just about taxes, but about financial planning in general, the kind of mistakes we can potentially make, how we can fix them, how to avoid them, all kinds of things like that. Because honestly, I think a big part of financial planning is to give you sort of peace of mind. And a lot of it is trying to avoid mistakes. But the other piece is also just knowing that there can be a way to fix most mistakes. So we'll walk through some of those fixes as well.
Sounds fun.
Right? I thought so.
Taxes. Where should we start? Ooh. Taxes? Get the boring stuff taxes, out of the way?
Yeah, I think it's a good place to start just because it is what a lot of people are thinking about right now. I know I'm thinking about it right now. I know that this time of year when we have meetings with clients, usually that's what we're talking about. Like, what are all the forms that I need to have again? What did we do? What do I need to make sure is on my taxes? Because everyone's trying to make sure that they're doing it right. So there's a few common mistakes that we see with tax filing. And this really isn't about like, this is how you file your taxes correctly. It's more like, let's make sure that the things that we're doing for your investments and retirement planning are recorded accurately on your taxes. Like, that's really what it is. Like, let's make sure we don't miss things and we have all of the information that we need when we're going into tax preparation and tax filing. So I think the biggest thing that we do here and that a lot of our clients do that can sometimes lead to big questions is the backdoor Roth. And it's not super complicated in terms of what you do. You put money in a traditional IRA, you convert it to a Roth IRA. The more complicated piece is probably just making sure that when you do your taxes, you have everything entered in there and it's reflected correctly on there. So there is a form that gets filled out in your taxes. And when you're filling everything out, like the most important piece is that we make sure that if you made a contribution into a traditional IRA in order to do that backdoor Roth, that's recorded. So we didn't put money in a Roth IRA directly. We put money in a traditional IRA. So in the software or with your CPA, you tell them, I made a traditional IRA contribution. If you make too much money, that gets recorded as a non-deductible contribution so that the conversion isn't taxable. And this is all like pretty complicated. But the bottom line is, it gets messed up sometimes. You know, we have people coming back to us who are like, oh, I kind of unexpectedly owed money on my taxes. And I think the thing that my brain always goes to is like, let's make sure that we actually filed it correctly, because maybe you shouldn't have owed taxes. And sometimes you owe taxes for other reasons, so it could absolutely be legitimate. But there is a way to fix it. You know, if you didn't record it correctly, and with that particular scenario, it's like you have to file an amended return, which is annoying, but it means you get more money back. So there's lots of different things like that with tax filing that can come up.
I think two quick catches with that. Mm-hmm. If an accountant tells you, oh, by converting your IRA to a Roth IRA, that's resulting in you owing all these extra taxes, you know, quick red flag. It's not being reported as a non-deductible contribution. So you just got to remind the accountant or let them know I made a non-deductible contribution to an IRA. And if the accountant is confused by that, maybe it's time to get a different accountant. But but yeah, there is like Rochelle said, that form 8606, you know, indicates that you contributed to a traditional IRA, did not take a tax deduction, and it should be pretty smooth sailing there. Occasionally, we'll have clients who get a letter like 2 years after the fact from the IRS saying they owe taxes that they were supposed to pay on this Roth conversion, and that also indicates that it wasn't filed correctly. It was just no contribution was reported. And then, like Rochelle said, you got to make an amended tax return. Pretty easy. Annoying, but pretty easy to do. The nice thing with a lot of these tax mistakes is they're pretty quantifiable and correctable in many cases, whereas some other stuff with financial planning is sometimes harder to know if you've messed up and hard to quantify what that impact is. Sticking with the IRA theme, though, you know, we'll occasionally come across folks who contribute directly to a Roth IRA when they exceed the income limit for being eligible to contribute to a Roth IRA. So there's an income threshold depending on your tax filing status, married, single, et cetera. Just Google it. It changes every year. But if you're over that income level, you can't do a Roth IRA. If you're under the income level, you can. And if you're over the income, that's where you have to do this backdoor Roth IRA. But if you do accidentally contribute to a Roth IRA, you can, if you do it, you know, before the tax deadline, you can recharacterize your Roth IRA contribution into a traditional IRA instead. So essentially you're just withdrawing the money from the Roth and putting it in a traditional, and you're still able to count your contribution for that tax year. But if it's past the tax deadline, you need to withdraw that ineligible contribution before the, I believe you can file an extension and do it before October 15th, the extension deadline, to avoid the tax penalty. You'll have to file an amended tax return, though, if you've already filed a return for the year. But if you don't withdraw it, there's a 6% penalty on the amount you contributed every single year that money remains in the account. So yeah, it's smart to get that out if you accidentally contributed it, and avoid that penalty if possible.
I think with all the tax mistakes, it's like the second you figure out you did it wrong, try to get it fixed. Like, because the sooner you fix it, the better it's going to be. And if you have any questions, talk to an accountant. It's one of those things where, like, when we're dealing with all this messy stuff, and if you don't work with an accountant, it can be very helpful to have someone like that help you sort it all out. Other tax mistakes we see sometimes is, or not even tax mistakes, but like retirement plan contributions, an error is like if you make too much contributions or you make duplicate contributions. I have a client who has a traditional IRA with one company and a rollover IRA with another company. And a couple of years back, he made contributions to the limit into each of them, which an IRA contribution limit, so for 2024, it will be $7,000. It's not $7,000 per account. It's $7,000 into IRAs, period. Like, you can't do a new contribution of more than $7,000. So if you do two of those, you're going to have to fix it. You're going to have to take it out. You may have to pay some tax penalties. But the sooner you catch it, the better. The sooner you fix it, the better. The same is true for, like, workplace retirement plans. So in 2024, the IRA deferral limit into a 401k or 403b is $23,000 as an employee. So as an employee having withholdings coming out of your paycheck and putting into that retirement accounts, the most you can do is $23,000. But that applies, again, across multiple retirement accounts. So if you switch employers halfway through the year, a good example may be when you finish residency or fellowship and you start your attending job. You know, that whole entire calendar year, you can't put more than $23,000 into those retirement accounts. If you're working for the same employer the whole year, the payroll department, I've never seen them miss catching it. It's like they should catch it. They should know that this is the contribution limit. They're not going to put any more than $23,000 in there. You're fine. But if you switch employers and you do a chunk into one plan and a chunk into another plan, you can put too much in. And it's really important that you, like, if you get your W-2s and you see that, like, you have to fix it. You have to take out the excess and the earnings associated with the excess also.
And some of you will see this, even if you don't change employers, you're working at a hospital or an academic institution and you technically have multiple employers. Like,
yeah, you're paid, you're duly partly employed.
Partly by the university, partly by the physician group or the hospital or something, and each has their own set of benefits and retirement plans, and they don't always talk to each other. So it's like you have two 403Bs, the combined limit, you know, is what you can do to both of them. So if you contribute to one, you know, make sure you're not over contributing to the other, or you do the math so that you, you hit that limit, or you're going to have to withdraw the excess each year. If you don't withdraw the excess amount, then you pay a penalty. And you might be thinking, well, how are they going to know that I over contributed? Like, how's the IRS going to catch it? Like, how are they going to know I did multiple Roths? Like every year you make an IRA contribution, there's a form 5498 that goes to the IRS that tells them, here's what you contributed to this account. Same with retirement plans. It's on your W-2. So like they have a record of it, and it's just a matter of time before they eventually, you know,
review it.
Their audit screens and say, hey, you contributed to multiple IRAs, or you over contributed to the 401k. And for every year you don't correct it, there's going to be a penalty for that year. So you're just delaying the inevitable by not correcting it right away if you over contributed or contributed to the wrong type of account. And yeah, if you kind of screw some of these things up, it's okay, but you might need to become good friends with an accountant to help you fix it.
Mm-hmm. Your new best friend. So another reporting requirement has to do with solo 401ks. So for folks who are self-employed or get paid on a 1099 basis, will often help people set up solo 401ks, or they may set one up on their own so that you can make lots of contributions into a retirement plan, which is great. But after you reach a balance in that account of $250,000, there are some additional reporting requirements. There's a form called 5500EZ, and that one, you have to file it by July 31st, I think, like following the year that you reach that balance. Is that correct, Corey?
Yeah, so for your 2023 contributions, you have to file it by July 31st, 2024.
Right.
Unless you file an extension on that plan, then you have until October 15th.
Right. So if you don't do it, you're going to pay some penalties. It can be a lot. And I guess, Corey, you mentioned that this has happened with a client before.
Yeah. And the penalties can be pretty steep. They actually used to be really steep. It used to be every day you were late, it was a $250 penalty up to a maximum of $150,000.
Insane.
Now they've reduced it to a $25 a day penalty up to $15,000 just for, you know, forgetting to file the form. I have one client who I guess just forgot to sign and e-file his 5500. I think he had it and everything, it just didn't get filed, or he switched TPAs and something got, you know, was lost in translation and it didn't get filed. And he, you know, got a letter from the IRS a couple years later, like, hey, we don't have a record of this on file. And he's like, well, I'm pretty sure I filed it. And, you know, he has like the signed form. I guess it just didn't get submitted properly. And, you know, I helped him. We connected with the IRS agent assigned to the case and talked about the options. And I guess there's this penalty relief program you can apply for rather than paying that 25 or at the time, $250 a day penalty. Which, you know, 2 years adding up, that would have been pretty significant. You know, she's like, well, you know, since it's an honest mistake, you know, you can do this penalty relief program where you fill out the form, file it, check a box, pay a $500 penalty, and that's that. Now I wouldn't make it a habit to do this every single year, because I don't know how many times it'll allow you to apply for the penalty relief. But, you know, the IRS person we worked with was very helpful. You know, they're nice people. They're humans. They're not you know, robots or whatever. So I think, you know, they're trying to catch the criminals. They're not trying to catch the honest citizens who, you know, just make honest mistakes. So there are opportunities to reduce these penalties, which we'll talk about another one with required minimum distributions here in a second.
Yeah. So again, talking about retirement plans, but required minimum distributions apply to like your pre-tax accounts. So pre-tax IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, all of those kinds of accounts. You get a tax deduction when you put money in there. And eventually the IRS wants their share. And so you can't put off taking money out of that account forever. When you do take money out of that account, you have to pay income taxes on the withdrawals. currently you have a specific age where you have to take withdrawals by in order to start paying the IRS their fair share, basically. I think right the second at 72, and it's going to be 73 shortly, or maybe it's 73 now already.
I think it changed last year to 73. Last year?
Okay. And then I know in 2033, it's actually increasing to age 75. So for most people listening, this is going to be when you're 75. You have to start taking money out of those accounts or else you're going to get hit with some big penalties. So there's like a formula that you use based on how much money is in the account and what your age is, and you have to take that amount out in that year. And then for inherited retirement accounts or IRAs, it's a little bit different. If you're not the spouse of the person that passed away, you have to take out that money within 10 years. So that is an RMD. Also, it's just kind of a different structure of an RMD. Right now, the penalty is 25% of the amount that needed to be withdrawn. So that's a pretty big chunk, especially if it's a large account balance. If it's a fairly small account balance, it may not be that much. But you can also ask for that to be reduced to 10% if it's corrected within 2 years. So again, fixing it sooner is better. But there's also other ways to say, hey, this is not my fault, you know, to kind of apply for relief similar to the program for the solo 401ks. So, for example, if you can blame your advisor, they won't charge you penalties. And that has happened in our firm. There was one advisor in our firm where whatever happened. What was it? You tell the story, Corey. You actually know the story.
Of all people we forgot to pull an RMD for, it was his dad's account. and there's like a formal letter you can sign. Like they have a process, but you can write a letter basically saying, you know, hey, we messed up, forgot to take the RMD, and they waive the penalty. Again, probably not something you can plan to do every single year, but you know, it was corrected in a timely manner. I think they caught it in January or something, and got the correct amount taken out, avoided the penalty. But I mean, even if you're not working with an advisor, you know, be like, hey, didn't realize I had to take an RMD this year. You know, this is a new thing for me. I've taken it now. Like, can you waive this penalty?
Yep.
And again, they're, you know, it's they can be somewhat lenient if you ask politely, but yeah, definitely want to correct it, because if you leave that money in there, you're paying that penalty every year, and it used to be a 50% penalty, now it's only 25%, but still, if you need to take, you know, for many of you, like, you're gonna need to take six-figure sums from your retirement accounts every single year once you hit that required age, and you know,
we don't want to pay 25% in that penalties on that.
Yeah, not good. So take your RMDs, or, you know, at least be aware of what RMDs are. So when you get to that age, you know, I got to start taking a minimum amount from my accounts every year.
Yeah, I think that's another one of those things that can cause some angst and, you know, some worry for people, because they know that those fees are steep and they're like, what if I do it wrong? It's like, you know, you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's. You're not going to do it wrong. Just, you know, give yourself a break.
And most custodians make it pretty easy for you.
They'll like, send it'll letters. Tell you
on the website, here's the RMD amount for this year that you need to withdraw.
Yep.
And it's pretty straightforward.
Don't ignore correspondence from your advisor when you're in retirement, especially in general, but also, you know, when you're retired. Yeah. There's other mistakes we can make too. It might be a little hard to accidentally withdraw money from a retirement plan, but sometimes it happens. Like if you leave an employer and then they switch plans and then they send you a letter that says you have to pick one of these three things or we're just going to send you your money or something like that. And you didn't look at the correspondence and you didn't check the box and they send you a check. You're like, oh no, I did not mean to take that money out of that retirement plan. So if you take money out of an IRA early, you would potentially, or not just an IRA, but you know, a 401k or anything like that, you end up paying taxes if it's pre-tax plus a 10% penalty tax for an early withdrawal. So we don't want to do that either. But you can potentially get that retirement plan money back into a retirement plan like an IRA within 60 days to avoid taxes and penalties. but you can only do one of those. It's called an indirect rollover. You can only do one of those per year. So don't make that a habit, like taking money out and put it back in for whatever reason.
I have had clients take advantage of that 60-day rollover for like a home down payment or something.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I need, you know, an extra 20 grand to close on this house. I can pay it back because I'm, you know, expecting another paycheck or a bonus here, you know, next month. So, you know, take some money out of the IRA, put it back in a month later. But yeah, it's if you don't get it in within 60 days, then it's considered a withdrawal and you have to pay income taxes on the amount withdrawn, assuming it was pre-tax money, plus a 10% penalty if you're under the age of 59 and a half. But yeah, like Rochelle said, common if you're at an employer and you leave, that they might just send you a check if you don't elect to do something else. Or maybe you're just, you know, on the website and you're trying to take a withdrawal and you accidentally click your retirement account instead of the brokerage account, the taxable account to take money from, and you're working quickly. And, you know, so take a step back, go slow, make sure you're withdrawing from the correct account in the first place. But yeah, you do have an opportunity to correct it if it is an accident there.
Yeah.
Let's see, transitioning here to investments. You know, everyone has some investment regrets or things that they wish they did or didn't invest in. You know, we could probably have endless stories, but a few here. You know, I know someone who a few years ago, when crypto was the craze of the world, the asset class du jour, and everyone was investing in crypto, but he found some crypto operation that promised, I think it was like a 20% annual return over 5 years. So it would have been 100% total. And, you know, this is when crypto, you know, people would put money in and it'd double like within a week. So, you know, it wasn't an outrageous growth rate compared to what you were seeing. And the program's like, hey, we promise you 20%. And we will keep the excess if it's more than that. And we're planning on it being greatly more. That's how we make our money. But even if it goes down, you still get your 20%. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. That operation turned out to be a scam and he lost all the money invested in there. So I think, you know, make sure, again, if it seems too good to be true, probably is. But if it is a more speculative investment, only invest what you're willing to lose. You know, treat it like gambling money. Whatever you'd take to Vegas and throw on the roulette wheel, that's what you can put in these speculative investments.
Yeah, and if anyone says, I promise, and it's not like a bank account with FDIC insurance, you know, read the fine print carefully. I don't know. They shouldn't be promising anything.
Yeah, unless it's like an annuity. And then the promised returns are going to be very, very modest. It's like, okay, it's a guarantee. It's not an attractive guarantee because it's so low, but it is it's, you know, better than nothing, I suppose. You know, you could probably do better in a more traditional investment, like, you know, stocks or whatever. But, you know, it seems reasonable, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think some of these are like the not fixable things, and that's okay, you know. Or there are things that happen. You can lose money on real estate investments. I think a lot of people think, oh, this is like, you know, guaranteed. We're going to get this going. Real estate's great. But you can lose money on flips, rentals, pooled investments, all kinds of things, you know. When you're buying even your primary residence, you know, you move to a new city, and then it turns out you really hate the job and you have to relocate 6 to 12 months later and then you have to sell your house. Like, you're probably going to lose money on a transaction like that as well. So there's lots of little mistakes that can end up being fairly costly, but not things that you can't overcome, you know, like at least if you're giving yourself a little bit of flexibility in your plan. So ideally, if you are moving to a new city, you're not buying right away because we don't know if you're going to love it there. So you want to give yourself a chance to really feel like it's a good fit before you make that kind of commitment.
Try before you buy.
Yeah,
as painful
absolutely.
As moving twice is, like I've had several clients where that's happened. Like, hey, let's move, buy a house. We're happy. Oh no, we're not happy. We don't like it. We don't like, for whatever reason, the job stinks. You don't get along with the people. Maybe it's you're doing a different set of cases than you originally thought you were going to be. You're further from family. You're too close to family. Well, you know, whatever the case is, and you need to, yeah. Real estate transactions are great ways to just burn money. You might as well just have a bonfire with $1 bills and, you know, make s'mores than buy and sell a house within a few months or a few years even.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've had a friend who, you know, turned their home, their starter home into a rental, and, you know, initially was going all right, but then the tenants stopped paying rent, and in certain cities, tenants can just do that, and they have like multiple months where they cannot pay rent, and evicting them is challenging, and they wouldn't leave, they wouldn't pay rent, and just a giant headache, legal fees, you know, just pain in the, and he, you know, he's like, I will never, ever, ever own a rental property again. That was just not worth it. Not worth the headache. You know, everyone's invested in stocks that have gone down in value. You know, I've seen some more significant losses than others, like, you know, 80% decline in the stock value, or it really, really pains me when, like, I've worked with some folks, or to very least talked with some people who've gone through an IPO, you know, work in the tech industry, and company goes public, and, you know, they're sitting on millions of dollars of stock options. And in many cases, I've said, hey, you might want to consider cashing out. You know, yeah, you'll pay some taxes, but your company's not even profitable, and it has a, you know, $100 billion valuation. Like, statistically, this is not going to stick. And then in many cases, I've seen literally millions of dollars of wealth evaporate, you know, just because that's, you know, the everyone's excited around the IPO, and then eventually the, you know,
the fundamentals catch up to them a little bit.
Yeah, and people move on to the new shiny thing, and that stock isn't cool anymore. And yeah, you got to make money in order to be a successful business. Like, there's a reason Microsoft is the most valuable company on the planet, because they just print money. They make a lot of money. a lot of these, you know, startup companies, especially new publicly traded companies, they're not profitable. The reason they're going public is to raise money so they can invest in their business to grow it and turn it into a profitable, you know, business. But at this, if they were profitable and they were making a lot of money without having to go public, it's a lot easier. A lot less regulation, a lot less red tape, a lot less reporting requirements. It's a lot easier to operate and manage a privately held company. So, like, the big incentive for going public is twofold. One, to raise capital to, you know, grow your business, and also cash out. You know, a lot of the initial investors and owners see that as their big payday, and they're out the door after they go public.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So yeah, diversification, don't overly concentrate your wealth into any one investment.
Yep. I think in terms of how we apply this further to, like, what do you do next? Those are all examples of, like, sunk costs. Like, once it happens, it happened. Like, you can't change the past. You can't fix it, really. So it's important that when you're making new decisions about what to do with your money moving forward, you're making the best decision based on present circumstances, not what already happened. And we see clients do this a lot. You know, I think one good example is I have actually a personal friend who has a lot of money just sitting on the sidelines in her retirement account, because she did, like, an indirect rollover, that 60-day rollover, to lend her sister money to buy a house. And while the money was out of the market, it went up significantly. And then she didn't want to put it back in the market because she felt like she'd lost money. And it's been sitting on the sidelines ever since. And it's a big chunk of money. So when something like that happens and we, like, have money and we're like, oh, we just lost a whole bunch of money, you can't make a decision based on what already happened and try to fix it that way, because we can't change the past. You can only make the best decision moving forward. Like, what is going to be my best option right now? And honestly, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the market moving forward, but you do know things like more time in the market is better. I probably shouldn't just sit on this, like, that kind of thing. So it's really important not to get caught up in past mistakes. like try not to let that determine what you're doing moving forward. Try to just make decisions based on what works best.
Yeah, I think you threw in like a car repair here.
Yeah.
Like, if you have another car repair that comes up, it doesn't matter that you already paid money for one repair. Like either you got to fix it or don't. But that, you know, it shouldn't influence your decision there. I mean, we see this as like the investment example is a classic one, you know, waiting for the investment to rebound before you sell it or waiting for the market to come back down before you invest. Like, it's not going to happen. Sorry to
tell you. I mean, maybe you might get really lucky, but the waiting game generally doesn't work that well in investing. Yeah.
I think a good exercise is, you know, if you have money invested and you're trying to decide, do we keep this or move on from it? Pretend like you have cash instead of the investment. And at this juncture,
erase your memory. So far. Mm-hmm.
Do the Men in Black flashy pen thing and erase your memory from the past. Just looking forward, you have cash. Would you buy this investment or would you choose to do something else with that money? Buy a different investment, pay down debt, whatever.
Yeah.
If the answer is yes, I would buy this investment. I have high conviction in this investment strategy, whatever. Great. Keep your money invested. If you would do something else with the money instead, then okay, let's move off of this investment, go to something else that you feel is more appropriate. Now we got to be careful though, because if we're being emotional about this decision, this investment just went down, you know, my sound diversified investment portfolio went down in value this year. I would want to do something else with the money instead. Let's sell out of everything and go do something. Like, okay, maybe that's not the ideal strategy. If you're trying to time the market, but I think not holding on to those past mistakes and letting them hurt you further is more the point here.
Absolutely. Yep. Other kind of random example, but I think college savings is a good one. I have some clients who are pretty hesitant to put a lot of money into a 529 account just because they're not very flexible. If you overfund that account, if you get to the point where you've got a bunch of money in a 529 account and your kiddo decides like they don't want to go to college, period. Like, what are the options? So I don't know if I would consider that a mistake, but at this point, you know, the plan didn't go how we thought it was going to go. So we've got to come up with some alternative solutions here. So nowadays, you can potentially use that money to fund a Roth IRA for the beneficiary if the account's been open for 15 years. And there's some other restrictions in terms of like how much you can put into a Roth IRA and things like that, but it's up to $35,000 total. So that can be a good option. You can also potentially roll those funds to another beneficiary if they're related, like a younger sibling, a grandkid someday, all of those kinds of things. And you really control that account if you're the one that is like the owner on the account. So you get to decide, you know, even if you had set that money aside for one kid, it doesn't mean that you have to use that for them. So that's a decision that you get to make at that point in time. You can just take the money out. You know, you would end up paying taxes on the growth plus penalties. So we don't love that, but it's not the end of the world. If you're paying those taxes, it's because it grew, honestly. And we don't want to pay those taxes, but that is another alternative.
I look at it like, hey, we saved all this money for college. We saved more than we needed.
Yeah.
So now we get to keep some of it ourselves. That was money we were planning to part ways with.
Yeah.
No one likes paying extra taxes, but it's, you know, you're netting at the end of the day more than you originally planned. But
yep.
I think on the good problem to have if we maybe oversave, but if we undersave, like what if we don't save for college?
Yeah.
It's like, there's multiple ways to get college paid for. You know, you can pay for it out of your earnings. There's student loans, there's scholarship opportunities, you know, military, like a lot of options there to you know, get college paid for. Now on the retirement saving side, if you don't save enough for retirement, that one's a tougher one to correct.
You're probably gonna have to work longer if you can.
Yeah, work longer, die sooner, live on less. So, so that's one where start saving early and often. We've talked before, you know, at a minimum, try and save 20% of your gross income, your total max, you know, before tax income, try and save at least 20% of it every year for retirement purposes. And that should put you on a pretty good track to retire comfortably at a reasonable age and live a similar lifestyle in retirement to the lifestyle you grow accustomed to living while working. But yeah, if we don't save enough, you know, we could try and play catch up, you know, and that's, you know, better than not, you know, just throwing in the towel. But yeah.
Yeah, totally. Just another little aside, completely different, but with health insurance, you know, we can trip up a little bit, especially if we're switching jobs and things like that. So luckily with COBRA, which is where you basically get to enroll in your previous employer's health insurance plan, you have a window where you can enroll, and you can enroll retroactively. So it's a 60-day window. So if you leave and you don't enroll in COBRA immediately, it's okay. You can still go back and enroll, like, you know, a month, 6 weeks down the road, at any time after a qualifying event. So it could be, you know, you've left your job, you got fired, you got laid off, you got married, there was a divorce, you had a child, like anything like that, you are able to enroll in COBRA. And then it can last for quite a while. So that's a good way to have insurance, even if you can't, like, go through the process and get extra insurance outside, like in the marketplace or whatever.
I think that goes for the marketplace as well.
You know, yeah.
You have 60 days from one of those life-changing events to potentially enroll in the exchange. You know, loss of job would be one of those. So, you know, mm-hmm. 60 days to decide if you're going to do COBRA or the exchange. Otherwise, you have to wait till the next open enrollment window, which is the end of the year. So, yeah, make sure you have a plan for the health insurance. And then Medicare, another one. When you are approaching age 65, start looking into Medicare. You have 3 months before and up to three months after your 65th birthday to get enrolled in Medicare. If you don't enroll during that 6 month window, you gotta wait till the end of the year when the next annual enrollment window is to hop on Medicare. So, I mean, if you're still working and you can stay on your employer's health insurance, great. Otherwise, you know, the exchange potentially or COBRA, but yeah, make sure you're paying attention to that one and getting signed up so that you have health insurance.
Yeah. I think with all of these things, you know, ideally we save ourselves some angst and worry about errors by being prepared ahead of time, which was what our last podcast was about, just leaving yourself some room for error. But there are also ways to fix a lot of these things. And so that's kind of the bottom line. We don't want to be too worried about it. But in general, we want to live below our means. You want to be really proactive about big life events, big, like, age factors, like age 65, that's important. Age 75, that's probably going to be important for all of you as well. You only want to invest in, like, speculative investments if you're willing to lose that money. It's like gambling. It's like, okay, this is for fun. This is not my life plan, ideally. If you are working on taxes, get it done on time. Fix things quickly. If you mess up, ask an advisor or an accountant if you're not sure, just to make sure that everything is in order, because you don't want that to come back and bite you later.
Yeah, if you're over age 70 or you have inherited retirement accounts, inquire about taking the required minimum distributions on those. They've made it more complicated in recent years, and now there's, like, depending on circumstances, different rules. So the rules can vary based on the scenario. Like, for inherited accounts, if the person wasn't taking RMDs already versus if they already were taking RMDs, you know, you might have to continue those at the same cadence. But if you own a business, have a solo 401k, anything like that, or self-employed, you know, make sure you have the right tax forms, you're filing them on time. And if you mess up, ask about opportunities for more lenient penalties. Mm-hmm. So
beg for forgiveness.
Yeah. If it's an honest mistake, there's a good chance that you can get a reduced sentence. But if you're trying to evade the tax man, that's where you'll get in trouble.
Absolutely. Yep. So do your best. It'll be fixable. It's not the end of the world, hopefully. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Have a good one.
We would love to hear your feedback and suggestions for future topics you'd like us to cover. You can get in touch with the show by emailing podcast@thefinitygroup.com or by following Finity Group on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Finity Group LLC.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corey Janoff CFP, Instagram at Corey Janoff, or on LinkedIn under my name, Corey Janoff.
You can follow me on Twitter at Rochelle Finance, or on Instagram, VanderZanden Rochelle, or on LinkedIn under my name, Rochelle VanderZanden.
Check out all of the podcast episodes on thefinitygroup.com/podcast, on our Finity Group YouTube channel, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to check out our Financial Clarity blog at thefinitygroup.com/blog.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Financial Clarity for Doctors by Finity Group, LLC.